Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday, January 27th. Frack Ban Bill Threatens Southeast New Mexico by Adrian Hedden. Carlsbad Current Argus, New Mexico. A bill that would block the use of hydraulic fracturing on state land was introduced to the 2021 legislative session by New Mexico Senator Antoinette Cedillo Lopez of Bernalillo County, intended to cease the practice while the state studies its impact on the environment. Hydraulic fracturing is a practice of injecting water, sand, and chemicals underground to break up subsurface shale deposits so that oil and natural gas can be pumped to the surface. The process, along with horizontal or directional drilling, was credited with creating New Mexico's recent boom in production that brought multi-billion dollar budget surpluses to the state, but also drew concern from environmentalists as to the effects on New Mexico's land and water. Cedillo Lopez introduced the bill first during the 2019 legislative session, but it was defeated before being brought to the Senate floor. An analysis that year from New Mexico's Legislative Finance Committee found the moratorium could lead to a $3.5 billion loss in revenue. It failed to gain traction in the 2020 session as well, but Cedillo Lopez said she hopes the bill would gain some momentum as New Mexico's already Democrat-controlled legislature appeared to lean further to the left after the 2020 general election. She said the bill, which had not been assigned a committee or number as of Monday, would not impact any current or ongoing hydraulic fracturing operations, but was meant to give the state some breathing room in addressing the practice's impact on water and air quality. Opponents characterized the proposal as a ban that would devastate New Mexico's bottom line, as the oil and gas industry was already struggling to recover from an historic collapse of the fossil fuel market created by the COVID-19 pandemic. It's actually not a ban, it's simply a pause on future fracking permits so we can look at the impact of fracking, Cedillo Lopez said. It does not require the closure of any wells. It's just a pause so that the state can do its duty to regulate this new technology. She said she was especially concerned with pollution in southeast New Mexico, where most of the state's drilling occurs in the Permian Basin region, an area suffering with widespread drought and worsening air quality. The Carlsbad and Hobbs areas were listed as having some of the highest levels of ground-level ozone in the state, created when volatile organic compounds, VOCs, interact with sunlight. Oil and gas development was considered a major contributor of VOC pollution by the state, and if the federal government deems the area's level exceed federal limits, permits for development could be blocked or incur greater costs. No piece of our state should be a sacrifice zone, Cedillo Lopez said of the southeast region. When people say that it's already trashed, let's forget it, that's offensive. The oil and gas industry has a responsibility to remediate its impact and clean up after itself. New Mexico Senator Gay Kernan, a Republican from Hobbs, represents voters in that region of the state, and she fears that disrupting the oil and gas industry could not only lead to shortfalls at the state level, but also decimate local economies like those in Carlsbad and Hobbs. A ban on hydraulic fracturing could mean thousands of lost jobs, opponents worried, and shrinking gross receipts taxes fund public services on the county and city level. If you're from southeast New Mexico, you know the impact it would have on drilling. It would have a terrible effect, Kernan said. It's a significant concern for the local communities. And with a more liberal lawmaking body this year, Kernan worried the bill could gain more momentum and move through the legislature. I think we're more at risk today than we were before because we do not have the moderate Democrats in place to stop this bill, she said. Things have changed. I was very confident last year, but this year I'm not as confident this bill won't move. But even before the bill passes the legislature or gets signed into law, Kernan said it already sends a bad message to oil and gas companies considering investing in New Mexico. Kernan said the industry is already fearful following a 60-day suspension of oil and gas leasing of federal land announced by the administration of President Joe Biden last week. Half of New Mexico's oil and gas operations is on federal land, and similar policy on the state level could mean major oil companies simply cross the border to Texas, where most Permian Basin development is on private land. The oil and gas companies have to go where they can produce. If the bill passes, that wouldn't be southeast New Mexico, Kernan said. We're always concerned with the oil and gas industry and want them to be good partners. I think they are, but they're going to go to locations where they can operate. Industry groups also voiced opposition to the bill. Larry Behrens, Western States Director based in Santa Fe for Power the Future, a group that advocates for energy companies, said stymieing energy development in New Mexico would create dire financial losses for schools and other public services. It is extreme arrogance to call a massive moratorium on fracking reasonable because it's for a limited time, Behrens said of Cedillo Lopez. We would suggest Senator Cedillo Lopez ask our schools to cut funding by over 30% every year for the next 4 years, and then explain to our families how it's reasonable. More than 15,000 on Midland Health List for Vaccine by Stuart Doreen. There is demand for the COVID-19 vaccine. Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday there are 7,000 people scheduled to get their vaccines at the mass vaccination site set up at the Horseshoe Complex and another 8,000 more on a waiting list. The 15,000 people are in addition to people that have already received the vaccine at Midland Health facilities, in local pharmacies, and elsewhere in the community. The demand for vaccines and information related to the vaccine program is so great that a phone number established to help residents with vaccine-related questions has been pretty overwhelmed. The number is 221-4-VAX-829. That number again is 221-4-829. And Myers said Midland Health officials are working to get more operators involved to handle more calls. He said those wanting to know information might find it easier and more efficient to email vaccine@midlandhealth.org. We would encourage you, if you haven't heard from us, to be patient, Myers said during Tuesday's Unified Command press conference. Our team is working through the waiting list, especially those who signed up very early. The information we received from them is not as complete as the later signups. Myers said there were 251 vaccines delivered on Friday during the soft rollout at the Horseshoe Complex. On Monday, there were 858. We'd hoped to give over 1,000, but we had a large volume of no-shows, Myers said. The state has provided Midland Health 5,000 vaccinations to deliver on a weekly basis, including shipments last week and Monday. The amount is enough that Myers said that Midland Health has talked to medical officials from neighboring and regional counties about providing small amounts of vaccine. Those counties include Howard, Glasscock, Martin, Presidio, and Jeff Davis, he said. Myers talked about the communication needed to make the mass vaccination process effective. He said not only is Midland Health working on its practices to get residents the information they need, but he said it would be helpful for those who have signed up to contact Midland Health, even by email, to let someone know if they are going to cancel an appointment. He said those expecting an email might want to look at their spam accounts, just in case an incoming email ended up there by accident. Myers said the process is such that there aren't issues with wasted vaccine. He also doesn't see the possibility of walk-in appointments happening. Have your registration ready. Myers said the vaccination can take as little as half an hour. He said those who have an appointment and are pre-registered can be in and out in minutes. If a person is not registered, it just takes a few more minutes, 10 to 15 at the most, and then with a short waiting period to make sure there's no reaction to the vaccine. Midland Health Department vaccinations. Dr. Larry Wilson, speaking for the Midland Health Department, said the second round of vaccines have arrived for those people who received a first dose of Moderna vaccine at the health department a few weeks ago. He also said the health department is not intending to provide any more first doses, but is working with Midland Health and the Mass Vaccination Program. Success with monoclonal antibody treatments. For those who do test positive for COVID-19 and want early treatment, Midland Health officials have said they are seeing success with the monoclonal antibody treatments in the infusion center. Meyer said the hospital has treated 346 patients through Monday, and of those, only 4 have been hospitalized. As we've said before, that's a population that we would expect as much as 20% hospitalization, as they're all high-risk patients, Meyer said. And that's a pretty solid success rate so far for the monoclonal antibody infusions. County split about affordable housing development in North Midland by Caitlin Randall. A zone change for an affordable housing development in North Midland was narrowly approved by the Midland City Council on Tuesday after some council members previously expressed concern about the number of lots that would be constructed in a small area. That subdivision from Bettenbow Homes will have 231 residential lots and 2 common areas, according to city planning documents. A zone change was required to construct homes on lots smaller than 5,500 square feet. About 104 of the lots will have a width of 45 feet, putting the lots at 4,700 to 5,300 square feet. One of our tasks is to make homes more affordable, a representative for Bettenbow Homes said during a first reading of the ordinance on January 12th. He added that they've made houses more affordable in other cities by building homes on smaller lots. The council approved the zone change in a 4-3 vote Tuesday, with council members Spencer Robnett, Scott Dufford, and Jack Ladd voting against the item. Ladd previously said that he was concerned about the lack of amenities planned for the subdivision and the number of houses that would be built there. "I'm concerned it's going to make for a worse neighborhood," he said on January 12th. The representative from Bettenbow Homes said there could be as many as 450 total homes built in the subdivision in the future. Dufford also said he had reservations about the neighborhood, specifically that each single-story house would be about the same size and have a similar facade. "In 25 to 30 years, the product isn't going to be as good as it is today," he said. Bettenbow Homes also constructed the Lone Star Trails neighborhood in the same area, which has the same concept of smaller, more affordable homes. Homes in that neighborhood range from 3 to 4 bedrooms and 1,100 to 2,600 square feet, according to their website. Homes for sale in Lone Star Trails are listed for between $188,000 and $350,000. The median listing price in Midland is about $300,000. COVID patients make up less than 20% of MMH occupancy. Things to know. The percentage of COVID patients in hospital beds in the region that includes Midland-Odessa was 9.35%, the third lowest percentage of the 23 regions in the state on Monday, behind only the Wichita Falls percent at 7.4% and the San Angelo region at 9.33%. Midland Health reported 73% of the 295 inpatient rooms were filled as of Tuesday morning. COVID patients made up 18% of the inpatient population, the lowest number in January and going back at least through December. The positivity report of tests taken at Midland Health Centers through Monday was 12.9%, which is lower than the 16.3% rate last week. A 12.9% rate is the lowest going back to the week of October 13th, 12.6%. The City of Midland reported another 3 COVID-19-related deaths involving Midland County residents on Tuesday. 2 of 3 took place Monday and the other on Sunday. The city reported that the total number of COVID-related deaths during the pandemic is up to 217. One was a male in his 80s. He was being treated at Midland Medical Lodge. also passing away were a female in her 20s and a male in his 30s. Both were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, and all three had underlying conditions, according to the City of Midland. City of Midland cases this week, Sunday, 19 confirmed, Monday, 90 unconfirmed. Midland Health Statistics Critical Care Unit, January 26th, rooms occupied 19, convalescing 1, percentage 87. Medical floor, rooms occupied 27, convalescing 7, percentage 63. Hospital occupancy out of 295 inpatient rooms, January 26th, rooms occupied 216, percentage 73. COVID percentage of occupied 18. Positivity report at MMH facilities. Percent of people tested last week 1,069. This week 233. Number testing positive last week 174. This week 30. Percent testing positive last week 16.3. This week 12.9. Department of State Health Services as of Tuesday afternoon. COVID percentage capacity Midlands Region Trauma Service Area J, January 25th, 9.35. City approves lease with PBA for multi-use trail park in Southeast Midland by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council on Tuesday approved a lease agreement with the Permian Basin Bicycle Association to build a 135-acre multi-use trail and disc golf course in Southeast Midland. The park is planned to open in the fall, with construction beginning in the next 60 days, according to city planning documents. It will be located next to the Harris Field Fire Training Center in Southeast Midland, near the intersection of Interstate 20 and Highway 307. This is going to be Midland's new favorite recreational area, Councilmember Jack Ladd said during Tuesday's meeting. There will be about 10 miles of trails, including two intermediate hike bike trails, a beginner or warm-up trail, and a two-mile gravel bike trail. PBBA will work with the West Texas Trail Alliance to create the trails. Upon completion of the trails, a pavilion will be built with multiple picnic tables, a bike stand with attached tools, and a heavy-duty tire pump. Access to the park will require a PBBA membership for $30 a person or $35 per family. Members also have access to the Odessa Mountain Bike Park. The lease with the City of Midland will be for 10 years, with the option to renew the lease for an additional 10 years. PBBA will be responsible for maintenance and upkeep of the park. PBBA and the WTTA are accepting donations for the project at fundtxtrails.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, January 27, 2021. Empty Bowls Event. Some of the bowls and ceramics that will be available for auction are seen Tuesday at the West Texas Food Bank. The annual Empty Bowls Event will be Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 1601 West Cliff Drive. The event features ceramic bowls created by students and faculty from Odessa College, Midland College, University of Texas Permian Basin, Odessa High School International Baccalaureate Program, the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, and Trinity School of Midland. City Boards, Commissions, Appointments. Total number of seats available due to term expirations or vacancies, 6. The Midland City Council made the majority of their appointments in September of 2020, but there are 3 remaining boards with vacancies. Terms generally vary from 2 to 4 years. A complete list of boards and commissions, along with meeting schedules, is attached to the application form and can be found on the city's website. Applications are available at the City Secretary's Office, Room 330, City Hall, 685-7430. The application can also be downloaded from the city website at midlandtexas.gov/243/boards/commissions. Deadline for applications is 5 p.m. February 12. Following is a list of the remaining boards and commissions which have open seats. Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District Board, 1 seat, Zoning Board of Adjustment and Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment, 1 seat, and 3 alternate seats, Citizens Development and Hotel Motel Advisory Board, 1 seat. When it's open, Midland County Tax Assessor, Collector, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, 688-4810. Midland Central Appraisal District, 4631 Andrews Highway, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, 699-4991. Department of Public Safety, Driver's License Office, 2800 Wright Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday and Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, 686-1120. Watering Schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of 2. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Contact your representative. City of Midland, 300 North Lorain, Midland, Texas, 79701. Website, midlandtexas.gov. Facebook, facebook.com/cityofmidlandtx. Twitter, twitter.com/cityofmidland. Mayor, Patrick Payton, 685-7204. City Council, at large, Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost. District 1, Scott Dufford. District 2, John Norman. District 3, Jack Ladd Jr. District 4, Lori Blong. Today in History. Today is Wednesday, January 27, the 27th day of 2021. There are 338 days left in the year. On this date, in 1880, Thomas Edison received a patent for his electric incandescent lamp. In 1901, opera composer Giuseppe Verdi died in Milan, Italy, at age 87. In 1944, during World War II, the Soviet Union announced the complete end of the deadly German siege of Leningrad, which had lasted for more than 2 years. In 1945, during World War II, Soviet troops liberated the Nazi concentration camps Auschwitz and Birkenau in Poland. In 1967, astronauts Virgil I. Gus Grissom, Edward H. White, and Roger B. Chaffee died in a flash fire during a test aboard their Apollo spacecraft. In 1972, Queen of Gospel Mahalia Jackson, 60, died in Evergreen Park, Illinois. In 1973, the Vietnam Peace Accords were signed in Paris. In 1981, President Ronald Reagan and his wife Nancy greeted the 52 former American hostages released by Iran at the White House. In 1984, singer Michael Jackson suffered serious burns to his scalp when pyrotechnics set his hair on fire during the filming of a Pepsi-Cola TV commercial at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. In 1998, First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton, on NBC's Today Show, charged the sexual misconduct allegations against her husband, President Bill Clinton, were the work of a vast right-wing conspiracy. In 2006, Western Union delivered its last telegram. In 2010, Apple CEO Steve Jobs unveiled the iPad tablet computer during a presentation in San Francisco. J.D. Salinger, the reclusive author of The Catcher in the Rye, died in Cornish, New Hampshire at age 91. 10 years ago, tens of thousands of Yemenis demanded their president step down, taking inspiration from Tunisians' revolt. They vowed to continue until their U.S.-backed government fell. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano announced that color-coded terror alerts would be phased out by late April 2011. 5 years ago, the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department agreed to overhaul its policies, training, and practices as part of a sweeping deal with the Justice Department following the 2014 fatal police shooting of 18-year-old Michael Brown. As he honored four people for risking their lives to protect Jews, President Barack Obama warned during a visit to the Israeli embassy in Washington that anti-Semitism was on the rise. He said an attack on any faith was an attack on all faiths. Today's birthdays. Chief U.S. Justice John Roberts is 66. Political and sports commentator Keith Olbermann is 62. Country singer Tracy Lawrence is 53. Source, Associated Press.
Hello, this is Cindy reading obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Alice Marie Bass, 81, of North Richland Hills, Texas, passed away on January 21st. Alice was born on April 17, 1939, in Russellville, Arkansas, to the late Lorraine Kaufman and James Edward Rogers. Alice is survived by her three daughters, Karen Clark, Lisa Hagelstein and husband Richard, and Angela Taylor and husband David. She is also survived by four grandchildren and eight great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. Alice is preceded in death by her late husband, Claude Bass, son-in-law Michael Clark, her parents, sisters Frances Perkins, Reba Jameson, June Rogers, and Nora Rogers. Currently, there are no services planned. Amy Jewel Sims, 65, of Midland, passed away on January 22nd at her home in Midland. Amy was born on June 8, 1955, to Leonard Hill and Navarie Jewel Larkins in Midland. She is survived by two children, Philip Sims and Angel Sims, 10 siblings. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, January 27th at 10 a.m. in the American Heritage Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. All arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Daniel Dominguez Jr., age 38, of Midland, passed away on January 11th. Cremation services have been arranged with a memorial service to be scheduled for a future date. Arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Eric Hinojos, 41, of Odessa, passed away on January 24th at Midland Memorial Hospital in Midland. Eric was born on May 12, 1979, to Toribio and Sylvia Lozano Hinojos in Van Horn, Texas. He is survived by his parents and four sisters, as well as 10 nieces and nephews. There will be no services held at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
This is the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 27, 2021. County thwarted in bid for Mass Hub. State tabs Medical Center Hospital instead, by Bob Campbell. The caption reads, Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia engages in conversation after an Ector County Commissioners meeting Tuesday in the Ector County Commissioner Court. Beaten to the punch in their efforts to establish a mass vaccination hub by state health officials and Medical Center Hospital, Ector County Commissioners heard Tuesday that the County Health Department will now concentrate instead on inoculating nursing home residents and giving second dose COVID-19 booster shots to the 700 people it has already vaccinated. County thwarted in bid. County Judge Debbie Hayes said at the 10 a.m. meeting that the County Coliseum's Building C will remain ready as a mass hub if it's ever needed. Hayes said she had been meeting with emergency management Coordinator Ricky George, Building Maintenance Director Charles Pierce, Health Department Director Brandy Garcia, and others until the Texas Department of State Health Services designated MCH to establish a hub at Ratliff Stadium just north of Odessa off Grandview Avenue. Hayes said the health department so far has only been able to get 200 or 300 doses of the Moderna vaccine at a time. Asked if she felt that MCH stole her thunder after the health department issued a news release announcing its hub late last Friday afternoon, Garcia said, "No, our goal is to get everyone vaccinated. If individuals can go out to Ratliff and get it, that's great. We're waiting on the vaccine, and we want to assist MCH by going to the nursing homes and bringing the vaccine to the vulnerable population who can't go to the stadium." Garcia said representatives of CVS Pharmacy will administer the vaccine at four local nursing homes, and her department will pick up with the ones that are not covered by CVS. In other business, a bid was accepted from Parkway Chevrolet of Tomball, northwestern of Houston, to supply 27 new Chevrolet Tahoes to Sheriff Mike Griffiths' patrol deputies. General Motors shut off all new orders for Tahoes yesterday, but this dealer has 30 in stock, Griffin said before the commissioner's meeting. "But they're not the color we wanted. They're white, and we wanted gray." Fitted with special law enforcement equipment, the Tahoes are expected to be delivered in the spring or summer, when they will allow all 40 of Griffin's deputies to take their vehicles home and enhance the law enforcement presence in their neighborhoods, the sheriff said. The commissioners last August authorized a $2.5 million expenditure for the Tahoes, including the installation of radios, decals, and other equipment after they arrive here. New beginnings. The caption reads, from left, Director of the Jesus House Women and Children's Center, Shirley Alamanza and Donnie and Laura Kyler cut the ribbon with Odessa Chamber of Commerce Ambassador Becky Martin Tuesday afternoon at the Jesus House Women and Children's Center. The Jesus House Women and Children's Center is calling for sponsors to help host their first annual benefit dinner called the Hope Wins Banquet, which is planned for February 12th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Jesus House finally has ribbon cutting by Michael Barr. After multiple delays, the Jesus House Women and Children's Center was finally able to have its ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday afternoon. Located at 620 South Grant Avenue in Odessa, the center's purpose, once it finally opens in a few weeks, is to provide homeless, single women and women with children a safe, secure, and nurturing environment where they can obtain compassionate support and services needed to achieve self-sufficiency. It's been a year and a half process of getting everything built, Jesus House Women's Set and Children's Center President Shirley Almanza said. We're excited about finally coming together. We finally have the ribbon cutting. We're very excited. The Jesus Hope House Women and Children's Center was originally planned to open a couple of times last year, but was pushed back due to problems with COVID. We had planned to open January 1st of last year and then got pushed back to April. And that's when COVID kicked in, Almanza said. It was then pushed to November, and then our fundraiser didn't go through, so we weren't able to open then. Now we are prepared and ready and looking forward to going ahead. We're just hoping to raise funds. The 3,800 square foot family housing center provides housing, clothing, and food in efforts to achieve self-sufficiency, which includes opportunities for higher education, budget training, goal setting, disciplineship, health and fitness training, as well as career training and parenting classes. Concerning eligibility, the Women and Children's Center will screen potential residents. To be eligible for residency, people must be considered homeless, must have some form of verifiable taxable income within 4 to 6 weeks of the beginning program, able to pass a criminal background screening, including domestic violence violations, no gang-related activity within the last 12 months, no emotional or behavioral instability within the past 12 months, and must be 18 years of age. Alamanza said the center will start with 16 residents in the program. "We have a few applicants," Alamanza said. "We need more applicants, so we're looking at women that have children that are either homeless or somebody that just got evicted because they can't make ends meet." Alamanza added that this is a 12-month long program. The ladies and the children come in and they are required to take a fast-paced program that's designed to help them learn budgeting and help them learn parenting skills, life skills, fellowship skills, and just how to fend for themselves, Alamanza said. They're required to have a taxable income in the next 4 to 6 weeks of coming in just to get themselves settled. "We are and requiring higher education, whether it be a GED or whether it be online classes that they are taking. During that 12 months, it's intense training, and they will be required to put savings in their savings account." Alamanza said that there is a point system where the residents receive points from doing various things such as chores, attending classes, or cooking for a family that night. With those points, they can trade those in for gift cards for Uber rides or McDonald's or to the mall, Alamanza said. "Sometimes it's nice for them to go out and get their own things." Alamanza anticipates there will be a bigger need for the Jesus Hope Women and Children's Center with the effects from the pandemic and evictions. "We've already seen and heard from some ladies that the rent is too high and they can't pay it and they will be evicted, and in those kinds of situations," Alamanza said. "COVID has slowed our opening down. A couple of times we've planned to open, but we couldn't do it because of the restrictions." The Women and Children's Center will be hosting its first annual Hope Wins Banquet, where the proceeds will help benefit the center. The event will take place on February 12th at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center and will provide a meal and feature comedian Michael Jr. A fundraiser has been planned in November that, according to Alamanza, was going to help take care of their operating budget, but was canceled due to the pandemic. "Our operating budget is around $150,000 a year, and so it would be wonderful if we could raise that amount. But we know that it's hard to get people together, but we are taking strict precautions," Alamanza said. "We're only putting 4 people to a table to help social distance, and we are going to extremes to make sure that everyone is safe and abiding by guidelines. More information on the fundraiser can be found at the Jesus House website at https://www.jesushouseodessa.com. Those who are interested in donating can go to https://www.jesushouse.com/ladies and https://www.jesushouseodessa.com/donate-CIGHI. The caption reads, Reverend Clift DeArmond Wright gives a closing prayer following the ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday afternoon at the Jesus House Women and Children's Center. Still reading from the front page, Mass Vaccines Effort Running Smoothly. MCH City Partnership has vaccinated almost 5,000 so far. By Laura Dennis. Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin said the mass vaccine effort at Ratliff Stadium is proof that we are better together and West Texans take care of West Texans. The effort started Sunday with MCH staff, city workers, including Odessa Police, paramedics, fire and rescue, and dozens of volunteers who by Tuesday afternoon had vaccinated almost 5,000 people with the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine in the fight against COVID-19. During a Zoom press conference Tuesday afternoon, Tippin praised the cooperation between MCH, the city, and Odessa Regional Medical Center. The Permian Basin is moving towards better vaccinated, is being vaccinated, Tippin said. It's a huge joint effort. OFD, OPD, even the UTPB tennis team volunteered, and we have been able to vaccinate 4,881 in 3 days. That is a huge number. It doesn't happen easily, and it is amazing to me when organizations cooperate and work well together. He called Rod Huber, who is in charge of the city's Incident Command Center, a rock star who has helped keep the lines moving at Ratliff, which Tippin said was a site donated by Ector County Independent School District. The drive-through clinic has been so successful that Friday has been canceled by MCH as they expect to finish administering the doses on hand by Thursday. Those needing a vaccine should attend 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. today and Thursday. An update to the hours is that if you are not inside Ratliff in line by 2 p.m., the gates will be closed in order to vaccinate Ratliff by 3 each day. Hours and times for next week's clinic at Ratliff will be announced later this week. Tippin said they expect to administer the first of the two-dose Pfizer vaccines through the end of February and possibly into March. Second doses will likely be administered by MCH's urgent care clinic through an appointment system that is still being worked out. We can't stay at Ratliff forever, Tippin said. We can't wear out our staff, and so sooner or later, we will need to be back in clinics and hospitals. Dr. Rohith Saravana of ORMC also praised the mass and joint effort. We should be very proud of ourselves for what has been accomplished, he said. The next step is to come out of the pandemic. He warned that Odessaans still need to practice social distancing and wear masks as to not backslide in local hospitalization rates. MCH numbers on Tuesday included 77 COVID patients in-house, 22 are critical care, with 11 of those in CCU overflow in WSMP. There are 17 on ventilators. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown reported 19 at ORMC, with 13 in ICU and 6 on ventilators. 362 days. For 362 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information online on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 9 students, 5 staff. U.S. cases, 25,152,433. Total confirmed and 419,827 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntphuq. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine through the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. Clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates will close at 2 p.m. today and Thursday. Clinic will be closed Friday. Next week's clinic will be posted soon. Clinic is for Phase 1A, frontline workers, and Phase 1B, most at risk and for ages 65 and older. Online registration required for quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, we'll be rerouting to a waiting area to register before vaccinations. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/y3jqhz89. Walgreens is expecting COVID-19 vaccine soon. For more updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/y3lmw83. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine eligible, customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. the CVS stores will soon have the no-cost COVID-19 vaccine available. They will administer in a phased approach based on state guidelines when available to pharmacies. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y508QJE4. Two incumbents file for OC board by oanews.oaoa.com. Spots on the Odessa College and Ector County ISD Boards of Trustee are up for election May 1st. The filing period started January 13 and runs to February 12, the Secretary of State's website says. Two incumbent members of the Odessa College Board of Trustees have filed for re-election. Vice President Gary Johnson for Place 7 and Secretary Larry Johnson, Place 5. J.E. Coach Presley, Place 4, also is up for election. Those interested should file with the office of Ken Zartner, Vice President for Administrative Services at Odessa College. The office can be reached at 432-335-6701. Four incumbents have filed for the Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees. Hours for ECISD are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The election is May 1st. Those who have filed are Secretary Steve Brown, Trustee Nelson Minyard, President Delma Abalos, and Trustee Chris Stanley. Brown represents Position 5, Stanley Position 4, Minyard Position 7, and Abalos Position 2. Those interested can mail the applications to Cynthia McNabb, Post Office Box 3912, Odessa, Texas, 79760-3912. Email to cynthia.mcnabb@ectorcountyisd.org or fax to 432-456-9878. People can come to the administration building physically to fill out an application at 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. More information may be found on the ECISD website. United Family raises $500,000 for Area United Way Chapters by oanews@oaoa.com. The United Family reportedly raised $500,000 for United Way Chapters, which includes $23,183 for the United Way of Midland and $20,392 for the United Way of Odessa. These funds are typically raised as part of the Jackie Pierce Charity Classic, an annual golf tournament, the press release stated. However, due to COVID-19, the annual charity tournament went golfless and raised the money anyway. Even under very unique and challenging circumstances, we were able to pull off something pretty special this year. Marketing Director for the United Family and JPCC Chairman Matt Corman stated in the press release, "The tenacity of this organization and their vendor partners to roll up their sleeves and ensure the United Way agencies depending on them were not disappointed was amazing to see. The tournament went on even without the golf. The tournament was reportedly named in honor of United Supermarket's longtime produce director, who guided the annual golf tournament from its infancy until losing a lengthy battle with cancer in August 2002. The tournament was renamed to honor Jackie Pierce's memory in 2003. Local News Roundup. Hunting Extravaganza. West Texas Chapter Safari Club International has scheduled a West Texas hunting extravaganza from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday at the Midland Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. The event will include fellow silent auction, live auction, raffle, vendor booths, activities, raise money for conservation, promotion of youth education, youth hunting, youth sporting sports, and other activities. Tables and sponsorships are available. For more information, email info at westtexasci.com or visit www.facebook.com/WTSCI. Trade Days. The Spring Briar Patch Trade Days has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. March 6th and from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. March 7th at the Ector County Coliseum, Buildings D and E. There will be children's and women's boutique items, handmade items, dips and salsa, jewelry, candles, vintage items, and more. This is a free event to attend. Vendor space is available. For more information, call Diana Hamilton at 432-425-2413 or Daniel Ryan at 432-978-7405. UT System Institutions receive $5 million by OA News at oaoa.com. The Blackstone Charitable Foundation announced Tuesday the expansion of its signature Blackstone Launchpad Student Entrepreneurship Programming from two to eight campuses in the University of Texas system, bringing the initiative's network and resources to a more diverse set of students. The $5 million expansion will give even more students access to resources, opportunities, and mentorship at UT El Paso, UT Permian Basin, UT Rio Grande Valley, UT San Antonio, UT Medical Branch, and UT Southwestern. UT Austin and UT Dallas have been launchpad sites since 2016. This new venture is just one of many that will make up UTPB's initiative and workforce initiatives, information from UTPB said. A news conference is scheduled for 2 p.m. Thursday in the UTPB Library Lecture Hall. With four of the six campuses included in this expansion designated Hispanic Serving Institutes, HSIS, Launched Pad doubles the number of HSIs in its network, demonstrating a commitment to increasing inclusion in student entrepreneurship, a news release said. Expanding Launchpad to more UT institutions helps develop a more robust pipeline of student entrepreneurs in Texas. This experience will encourage them to generate new ideas and someday launch companies and drive job growth, UT System Chancellor James B. Milliken said. We are grateful to the Blackstone Charitable Foundation for its generous contribution and for its effort to reach a more diverse student population across Texas. UT students will be able to expand their ideas outside of the classroom by using Launchpad's events, mentorships, and an exceptional network to help them succeed in their entrepreneurial Ventures. At UT Austin and UT Dallas, Launchpad has been available to more than 60,000 total students with more than 14,000 engaged in programming annually. The Blackstone Charitable Foundation established Launchpad in 2008 and partnered with TechStars 8 years later to provide participants with access to its network of more than 10,000 mentors, invitations to signature events like Startup Week and Startup Weekend, and access to world-renowned content and startup services. With future founders, Blackstone Launchpad provides a seasonal 8-week fellowship during which student founders receive $5,000 in non-dilutive grant funding to support their time working on advancing their ventures, as well as access to workshops and advisor networks. Startup Grind also serves as an event partner and offers new student membership for Launchpad participants. Blackstone Launchpad has also helped students entrepreneur navigate the complex landscape of fundraising, job placement, and recruitment. Launchpad has achieved success across 24 campuses in the U.S. and Ireland, providing nearly 750,000 students with the access to resources, personal connections, and professional networks they need to get their companies off the ground. ORMC, General Surgeon to Host Virtual Lecture. OA News at OAOA.com. Dr. Michael Janis, General Surgeon at Odessa Regional Medical Center, will host a virtual lecture from 3 to 4 p.m. Monday to discuss why you shouldn't delay surgical care amidst COVID-19. COVID-19 has changed the way many go about their day, socializing, working, schooling, eating at a restaurant, and filling the gas tank. Even a trip to the doctor's office is difficult due to COVID-19. For those facing a major surgery, you might wonder what preparation and recovery will look like and whether you'll be safe during the procedure in a COVID-19 era. Janice will answer these questions and more. Viewers can join the live stream and submit questions to be answered at the conclusion of the event using this Microsoft Team invite link, tinyurl.com/y54vjmjw. This event is free and open to the public. Once the event is completed, those who are unable to attend the live stream may view the recording using the same link to watch at a later date.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.